welcome to another edition of Expanding Mind, our show dedicated to exploring and the explorers of cultures of consciousness. Well, as listeners know, I tend to enjoy keeping a radically open mind in the sense that I'm very interested in deeply religious, mystical, otherworldly, bizarre, uncanny, Freudian accounts of the world. And at the same time, I'm very interested and invested in some ways in some pretty scientific, reductionist, sociological, anthropological ways of looking at the same phenomena. And I think by playing those two off against each other, you often make the sparks that really illuminate what's going on in the world out there and the world inside. But sometimes I like to play a game with myself, which is to say, okay, what is that? What's a woo thing that I just cannot deny? So after all my kind of games, like, well, you can see it that way. Maybe it's just the brain recognizing a pattern. Maybe it's just some fluctuation of genetic material that's recreating that sense of awesome contact with God or whatever it is. Where's the thing where, like, the scientists in the room is just going to shake their head and I'm going to go, hey, I'm sorry, man, I just can't deny it. And one of those things for me is what you'd have to just call energy. And by energy, I don't mean what a physicist calls an energy. It's kind of unfortunate in a way that we have the same word for whatever is being opened up and transformed in, say, a yoga practice as the stuff that's running through the electric wire, because, of course, for the scientists, they go, look, you can't measure that stuff. It's not energy. Energy is measurable. But anybody who's done these kinds of practices, who've had experiences, who've gone, and at some point, even if you go, I don't even know what this stuff is, at some point you go, yeah, there's energy. The energy's working. I can feel the energy. I don't feel the energy. The energy's moving here. The energy's snaking in my spine. It's transforming. It's pulling me. It's pushing me. It's revealing itself as me. There's no way outside of it. In fact, the more I meditate, I don't even do as much Tai Chi and sort of energy work and as much as I used to, because I'm a lazy student now, but I still meditate a lot, and the more I go into meditation, you know, I think that I would become more, you know, mystical or more, you know, like a serene Buddha on the mountaintop, and what it's actually become is just more and more energetic. It becomes more and more clear that all the phenomena of my own mind is resting or riding on the whole kind of almost not human world of energy that has its own intelligence, its own plans, its own insights. So all that to be said, I'm really looking forward to today's show. We're going to be talking to Kelvin DeWolf, who's a master Chinese medicine doctor and creative martial artist, and brought to my attention by our own co-host, Maja Daous. We might as well bring Maja onto the show. Maja, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Eric. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm going to quote you. You said, and you're no slouch in the energy department. Let's just get here. You know, people who just listen to us don't really know, but, you know, you're no slouch in the energy department. And you described your experience with Dr. DeWolf as the craziest energy work I ever got.
It's
so coming
true.
From you, that is some high praise.
It was pretty nuts. Like, I've had a lot of people work on me. I mean, back in the day, I wouldn't let anybody touch me. I was kind of weird about that kind of thing. But then I became more open to having some healers, you know, touch me and work on me and stuff like that. And I've had Reiki, and I've had, you know, different, like you said, woo type energy workers. So a lot of them, there was really, like, no experience at all. I didn't feel the energy moving. I didn't feel anything. And with Kelvin stuff, I would only compare it to this very legitimate shaman that I also saw. I saw a lot of non-legitimate shamans as well. But there's this one shaman healer named Jude, the healer, who was at the Bodhi tree for a long time. I don't know if you've heard about him. But him I actually felt. And with Kelvin stuff, you could feel it, and it was very palpable, and it was undeniable. So whenever I have those kind of experiences, you know that there's some serious business happening.
Absolutely, yeah. So that's great stuff, and it's really good for us to talk about here. I mean, a lot of our topics here are kind of heady, and we forget sometimes that, you know, all the time we're riding on our horse of energy, and that one of the sort of most direct avenues towards, you know, exploring one's own consciousness and kind of peeling back some of the peeling back the floorboard and seeing what's beneath there is through energy work and the healing arts that surround energy work. So, with no further ado, let's bring Kelvin DeWolf on show. Kelvin,
Hi, how are you doing? Hello.
Good. You have an excellent name, by the way. Kelvin DeWolf is just, I don't know, it's very enchanting.
it's excellent to the point that nobody can remember what it is. I'm Kevin, Calvin, Melvin. What?
So what is the origin of your name? I mean, you have a somewhat interesting background, if I recall from your website.
Yeah, I don't really know where the name came from. I know my dad was a physicist, but we also had a Kelvinator washing machine and a Kelvinator refrigerator. So I think I was conceived on the spin cycle on the Kelvinator washing machine during his university progress. Must have some kind of thing happened. But even the name Kelvin comes from Lord Kelvin. It's the guy who invented the Kelvin temperature scale.
Right.
And that's not even his name. He was given that name by the university he worked at. It was the name of the river that the university used to be built, well, the first settlement.
That's excellent. So there's even some energy dynamics in your very name.
Yeah, it's crazy. DeWolf, too. That's good. Just any kind of energy going on there, wolf energy.
So why don't we start out with the kind of inevitable question about how you got into this stuff? You know, I mean, I want to talk about some of your ideas and your practices and stuff you've come up with in a bit. But it's always good to, like, get a sense of, like, you know, who are you, how old are you, what's on your mind when you start to go, hey, there's something in these practices, something calling me out of, from the Chinese medicine world or whatever it was.
Well, I took Chinese medicine because I wanted to learn it. Then I started doing it, and I said, wow, this stuff works. This is amazing. And then as I started doing it, I used less and less needles, and I just kind of used undulations on people's bones, and that started to work even better. So I just kept going that, and I figured that out, and then I kind of bounced off that and went and created my own thing. I call it Neigong, but really it's internal work. You work with the internal frequencies of people's bodies.
So what first drew you to Chinese medicine? I mean, were you a kid? Were you into martial arts? What was your
connection? I was into martial arts. I used to drive by this park every morning, and there's a bunch of guys working out, so I went and worked out with them, and they were way better than me. Like, I thought that was pretty cool, but they were way better than me. They could grab me by the arm, and my arm would go to sleep, and my legs would go to sleep, and I'd just fall down. So I kept trying to go check out these guys, and they said, you'll never learn this until you learn the healing aspect, because it's based on the healing aspect. I put off learning Chinese medicine for a bunch of years. I lived in Europe for a while, and I always came back to Chinese medicine. And I took Chinese medicine, and they have all these theories of everything, theories of the universe, but they don't match. So I thought that was really interesting. So during my doctoral thesis, I tried to match all my Chinese medical theories of the five phases and the Bagua. There's two Baguas, the pre-heaven Bagua, the post-heaven Bagua, and then through some serious thought, I actually figured it out. They're actually the same, but people talk about them differently. So if you talk about them the same, they all line up.
What you're saying is that there's different, you know, models for the sort of picture of the cosmos of energies and how they're related to directions and parts of the body or whatever. And you're like, how do you reconcile these things? And so did you come up with your own kind of system as a way of mapping all these sort of somewhat different pictures onto one thing?
No, I just wanted to kind of re-engineer it. I went back to my ancestry, which everything was was based on two different things. One was a push and one was a pull, and everything in between that was part of the golden ratio. So whenever you have a demarcation line, that would be the golden ratio, and we built our canoes or toboggans in those ratios. And if you do that, they last longer, right? If a tree grows up and it builds its branches in the golden ratio where everything's in balance, the tree will grow up and last longer. It was really about lasting longer. So I took that backwards and I put it into the five phases, if you know what the five phases, but five phases are the mixing of yin and yang. So you have sunlight mixed with gravity of the moon, you get the earth, and we live in the five phases.
Did you, in your research, did you come across any, because I know like with, for the listeners, they don't know, a lot of that like early Taoist stuff is focused on longevity in terms of making things last longer. Did you find any correlations between the Taoist stuff and the Native American stuff?
They're all based on the sun and the moon, really, and they didn't think about that as the end-all, be-all. That was just part of the frequency that you see. Like our maximum expansive energy is sunlight, and our internal energy is our gravity. So then you could work with those barriers. You try to push away and pull at the same time. So with a canoe, you pull back, and the canoe goes forward. So we kind of understood all about relativity. That's really how that works, too. Relativity, Einstein's string theory fits in it as well. You got nine strings that interact with each other. As they go towards each other, they become more metal. As they go away from each other, they become more fire or light. And then you got two strings that balances these in between them. That's 11 strings. That's your 11 strings from your string theory.
So Maja mentioned the Native American element. What's that's part of your ancestry, correct?
Yeah, I think the left side of my body is American Indian because it tans darker. I'm half American Indian. Which half? Oh, the left half.
Is that on your mom's side then? Because left is yin, right?
Must be. My mom's American Indian.
Right.
She's pretty amazing. She will tell you anything about American Indians that you would want to know. She's like a walking encyclopedia.
Huh.
Even the inventions. She did a dissertation on the inventions of the tribe that we're in, and it was like 700 pages long.
So your mom, the Native American, married a white male physicist? Is that right?
Uh-huh.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, what's the chances of that? Well, I'm sorry.
I gotta ask about these inventions. That just like totally blows my mind. So what's the tribe and what's some of the inventions that stuck in your mind?
The tribe is, we're called the Allies, Mi'kmaq Indians in Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, PEI, Quebec. They themselves are called the people, or the human beings, or sometimes they call the true human beings. And they live in a place where the tide goes up 40 feet and down 40 feet with the moon. The seasons come in. There's, like, you can see lots of reality happening at one time. You can see icebergs arriving in the wintertime. You can see whales coming in the other times. Like, you see nature really well. You don't have it like California where it never snows. You're kind of stuck in a perpetual spring, fall season. And when you can start seeing these things, you can really, well, once you see things, you can go towards them more. You can actually figure, oh, this is real. This is real stuff. And you feel the tide. You feel the energy of the moon because you see it. You see the whole tide going up 40 feet. So you can definitely get attached to that because you're made of water too. You understand? You just kind of just see it.
So it's apparent.
Yeah, and the inventions go along with it. So you have things like these canoes that have the front pushed up like the back of a wave, and the back pushed up like the back of a wave, and then you go and drive over waves. They kind of cancel each other out. We had a sail. We had a triangular sail. We had snowshoes. Those are like big dream catchers. The toboggan has the same thing in the front. Even the boards along the toboggan are spaced in the golden ratio, so it has the most strength. Our arrows, everything kind of goes along the golden ratio. You have a bow that has a curve one way that ends in the opposite direction, like a omega sign, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you just keep looking at these things, you should be able to figure out how to move energy on the physical level, too. If you take a bunch of giant magnets and spin them, you create this electromagnetic force. And inside our body, we have all these little teeny magnets called blood cells. And if you learn how to control those and spin them, you should be able to get a little electromagnetic force coming from those. Because those are just iron, and that's what a magnet is. You use your electromagnetic part of your brain and hook up with the magnetic part of your blood, and you create a charge.
So when you were growing up, how much of this, of your sense of your Native American ancestry was part of your life? Was it stuff that you just learned from your mom? Was it, did you kind of identify with it, or was it something like a little bit distant, you know, like the, you know.
But
the,
when you're a kid, you don't really have these little barriers like that. You don't think things like, is this normal? Is this everybody doing something different? To me, I grew up on the reservation sometimes. I grew away from the reservation sometimes. I was went to the summer jamborees, and I met all the relatives at one time. I watched rain dances. I watched the whole thing, and I came back out, and I lived in the other world for a while. And to me, that was normal. I thought everybody did it.
Yeah.
Right? Well, when are you guys going to the reservation? We never.
Yeah, then you realize later how lucky that is. I mean, you know, a lot
Mom,
of people...
how come my friends can't come to the reservation?
Yeah. You know, a lot of the people you see, I'm sure they come to you partly, you know, people are seeking, and they're seeking partly because they don't have any sense of a connection, any kind of thing that comes from anywhere. You know, it's like video games and, you know, high school and TV and, you know, whatever it is, you know, and it's a rare thing. Do you feel like that connection in your own life helped you kind of whatever understand or appreciate or tap into the Chinese, you know, Taoist worldview more easily, more robustly? Did it seem familiar in a way?
Oh, it was really funny. As soon as I saw this stuff, like, oh, that's the same stuff. The in the five phases, they use this pentagram to join the phases, and when the phases are joined, that's the balance point. That's actually our word for heaven.
Hmm.
So heaven is when you have all the phases balanced. So heaven can be here if the phases are balanced. And it's also the shape that is made when Venus and the Earth interact.
That's true. There's one of those coming up on the 5th of June. There's going to be a big Venus going across the sun between the Earth. So it's pretty true.
So if you look at how it works, you can watch how the Chinese make everything. If you look at the Chinese calendar, they have these different 12 animals, right? If you consider the animals, the years of Venus, so Venus will spin around backwards for 12 times when it makes a pentagram in the sky. So those are your 12 animals, and those are your five phases of your 12 animals, and then it resets every 60 years. So you got, this is your birth chart. You got wood dragon, then you have the wood snake, and for 5 years, then you have the next one, next one, next one, and each one will be a little different. Animal you are.
Was there a point in when you were kind of learning about this stuff and studying it where you actually like felt it in your body, or was it kind of more gradual and integrated, or was there like a moment that you had when you were reading about this stuff and then you just kind of felt it like a bubble popping or something?
I think what really happened was I used to do something like go for a hike and let it all kind of settle in. And I came back from a hike and I was lying down and I felt like these giant claws just ripped into my shoulders and tried to yank me away. At the same time, this big giant rope came up and snapped it. So when that happened, I'm like, okay, there's something really weird going on here.
So you felt it physically in your body?
Right. It was like it was actually pretty painful. My shoulders got clawed on and their knuckles got whipped by a giant rope. And it just jolted my body. And ever since then, I said, well, I just got to keep paying attention to these things. If you pay attention, you'll see this stuff all the time. And then it will start driving you crazy, but you can't let it go crazy.
Because, I mean, I think that's one of the big disconnects that exists in these areas, and especially with doctors, is they'll read a lot about this stuff. Like, you can have an expert in Chinese medicine that can tell you all the phases and all the theories, and they can, like, research the ancient Chinese texts and get it, but it all kind of stays in their mind, and they don't make that connection between their own brain studying about the mind-body connection and in their own body. So
it's really funny. Once you put your mind and your body together and work as a team, you get a different charge. You get, like, a whole different charge altogether. It's like when you have your left eye looking around, you get a different charge in your right eye, but then you get a different charge if you use both eyes at the same time. It's really what happens. You can't really explain it until you do it. Your body's more alive. You have more of your brain inside your body instead of being sitting on top of it.
Did you ever get any of those feelings when anyone else was working on you, or was it more kind of had to do just of your own volition? Like, was there anyone that was able to kind of trigger that response in your own body, or did you find it was more self-produced?
I noticed that when I did acupuncture, it worked. Because acupuncture is a very powerful spiritual opening thing. if you put the needles in your body will try to push them out.
Hmm.
And so you can feel the energy move towards the needle to push it out.
Hmm.
And sometimes if you get a really good acupuncturist, they'll have you breathe out your energy to where your injury is. So if you have a foot injury, they'll teach you how to breathe your breath down your leg and not your foot, not your toenails. And then when it's out there, they'll pin that in there so it stays there. Because we believe that the body is healed by itself by your subconscious. Your subconscious makes your body. So conscious in the part of your body, and you kneel it there, you pin it there, it will take time to heal it. Otherwise,
yeah, it's so funny. You know, I've been reading something like totally different. Our guest next week is Christoph Cox, and he's a consciousness researcher. Like, he's one of the more famous ones. And he is a super, you know, he's totally, you know, like, left brain scientist guy, although he's, you know, he's got a good spirit, and he, you know, he's a climber and he appreciates experience, but he's still coming from a real scientific point of view. And he was just talking about how the model of the brain, and I'm not saying it's the same thing as what you're describing, but there's these weird kind of connections where he was saying in his idea that our consciousness is just this really actually kind of small amount of activity that's riding on top of all of these subconscious processes that are deeply, deeply interwoven into the body. And so even from like he calls them like a zombie army, the idea that there's all these like little vaguely intelligent, you know, ways of moving and doing things, of, you know, driving a car, of, you know, brushing your teeth. Like, they're all composed of all these little bits that become habitual to us. And the training, in a way, moves in there and, like, creates these different kind of creatures. And they're all, like, super bound up in the body. So even these scientists, like, who are totally suspicious of any kind of energy model that we're talking about, kind of see the way that you know, it's still through the unconscious, through the not known, that we engage with the kind of resources and intelligence of
right.
the body.
What we try to do in my stuff is try to get more of the unconscious conscious. So there's three ways of looking at something. You can look at it, say you have a tree in the forest and you see the leaves blowing. From a Western point of view, you can describe it physically. You look at the way the leaves are blowing. From a Chinese perspective, you look at the wind blowing the leaves instead. And from my perspective, you look at where the wind comes from.
That's a lot about how, like, Western medicine works, right? They're only looking at the leaves. They don't look at the wind.
Right. They look at what happens on the surface. And Chinese medicine looks at what's called the qi, and I kind of look with the interaction between the minuscule qi and the bigger qi, and that creates an electrostatic charge.
Do you mean the qi that's in the individual body and in the larger, like, the cosmos of qi?
Right. So you have different layers of qi. Here's a good example. Have you ever watched a school of fish where they kind of all move together?
Yeah.
Well, think of that school of fish, the energy around it and through it, but not the fish, as one level of qi. We call it the Manitou. And inside the fish, you have its individual Manitou that holds it together, its gravity, and it has the consciousness of the fish that coordinates the whole inside of the fish, just where the outside school was coordinated the same way. That's just, and what it is, it's just a underlying structure of the reality that you see.
You know, it's funny when you use that example, because it seems to me that there's some, one of the things I'm thinking about is like how people who maybe don't grow up with these ideas, don't grow up in this culture, you know, and are trying to discover this world in their own experience and how they can do that. And one way I think that we already do it, you know, and that's one of the ways to help people see this world is to show them the way that they already do live in that world. And it's like, oh yeah, yeah. And then they can move in through their own recognition is that one of the reasons we're so enchanted by like just that. Like the school of sardines, and the thing is like billowing like this, you know, veil, this three-dimensional, you know, swimming, unfolding flower of movement. And you're like, it's so captivating. And you could say, yeah, that's just because it's pretty or whatever. And it's like, but there's something more. And I think that something more is that we recognize something there. We recognize something about the way that we can be part of these larger flocks of energy.
And we look at things like suns and moons, right? We see, look, the flower opens in the daytime, it closes at the nighttime, it opens, but we don't try to figure out why. And when you figure out why, you realize you're stuck in this kind of prison of duality. And you go to sleep because it's dark. You go to sleep because the plants you eat go to sleep when it's dark, right? You get up in the morning because the sun came up. It's time to see. The trick is to get off this illusion. The trick is to not fall for it. Like if you live in Finland for a summertime, it's always daytime. You know, right? You just get, oh, wow, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. See the caribou in my backyard? It's always daytime. And you live there in the wintertime, it's always nighttime.
Yeah.
If you didn't live on the planet, if you live in outer space, you would be always daytime. But because we live on this thing that spins around because nighttime, daytime, we're stuck in a duality. So you try to get off that by thinking more in a cosmic sense. And you don't really get pulled into it. And you try to make it so it's easier to stay awake. So a couple of times a week, you'll stay up as long as you can until you get tired, but you just get used to it until you can beat it. And there's one time a year during winter solstice where the world wants you to go to sleep the most dark. You stay awake for those 4 days, and that will make you a lot stronger. You have to get off this little duality to get stronger.
Interesting. So wait, let me just stay with this a little bit because it reminds me of some other stuff, reminds me of some Gurdjieff work, some other things, which is that in order to be able to discover the deeper flow that we want to align ourselves with, part of the trick, especially, is you got to resist some other flows.
Yeah, if you want to see the ocean, you got to get out of the river. And that's like a famous thing by some student of Lao Tzu. Remember him?
Yeah.
It's on there somewhere.
So do you see that world that we're getting out of? Is it just the human world? But see, if you use the example of the day and night, that in a way points to something I think a little more profound. Like sometimes people will present like the Tao or living with balance, in the cosmic sense as like the fallen world is just the like manufactured human cultural world of concepts and technology, and that's the world you want to escape into to return to this cosmos thing. And I understand that perspective. It makes sense why people say that.
I think they're all right. They're all right perspectives. So you just have to figure out which one you want to drive on.
Yeah, yeah.
Some people will give reasons why not to drink milk because no other animal in the world drinks milk when it's an adult. That's their reason. If they want to believe that, that's fine. But, no other animal in the world drives a car either. I'm not going to stop driving a car because if no other animal has caught up to it. And I'm sure if I gave a tiger a glass of milk, he's going to drink it just fine.
Right? What I like about what you're saying. Yeah, yeah. Is that if you're challenging those diurnal cycles, if you're saying like, yeah, the Earth wants me to sleep now because it's winter solstice and it's dark all the time, I'm going to stay up. There, right. It's like learning how to play not just against human cultural technology, but against certain elements of the natural world. Like you learn, like it's more like a, like push hands in Tai Chi, where you're like, oh, okay, let's see how I can do that, and then through that engagement with that level of energy, other levels seem to open up.
Yeah, what's really cool about it is you end up really fighting against yourself all the time. You start fighting against your own weaknesses, and you stop fighting against other people.
Well, I always like to look at nature like that, and in some of my investigations and seeing people overcome these, like crazy yogis, they'll do all these things to like combat that kind of natural response and build will. You can see it in nature too. Like there'll be these animals that will defy natural cycles. They're kind of like the yogi animals. And I really think of animals like, oh, well, all animals have this behavior pattern and it's set.
Yeah, I call them dragons, the black and white ones. I usually the ones.
Yeah, they'll be black and white ones. Like orcas do a lot of that kind of stuff too, right, where they don't obey the rules and they do crazy stuff that looks like they're thinking or playing. Like a lot of animals that will play will do stuff like that, where they're not paying attention to natural cycles or natural rules. And then there'll be these like full-on rebel individuals within like pack animals too. So it'll be like a pack or a tribe of animals, like wolves, and they'll all like obey the rules, but then sometimes you'll have an individual wolf that'll like go rogue. Right.
Right.
A lot of the rogue.
That's what a mutation is. A mutation is an individual rogue wolf inside your body that grows wings for the a Tyrannosaurus Rex or something, right?
Right, totally. So it's not just people that do this, but there's total, like...
Yeah, everywhere in nature, you'll see penguins that can fly underwater, so white. You have the top-of-the-line birds that can run, they're black and white, or the males. The top-of-the-line monkeys are black and white. This guy in Russia would tame foxes, and they all turn black and white. He didn't breed all the aggressive foxes, and he didn't breed all the submissive foxes, and within five generations, all his foxes were black and white.
Huh.
And the panda bear is a carnivore that eats grass. It's black and white.
That's why the white buffaloes
are sacred. The white buffaloes are the white part of the black and white. It went one past it. But then it's still a buffalo, so it's not going to grow any thumbs and make a spaceship. So it can only go so far.
So in a way, it's like we got to learn how to be more to recognize our own black and white.
Right, you got to recognize your divisions because your black and white is what kills you. We're all born. We have this little paradigm we live in. It's our mom, our dad, our brothers. That's a paradigm. We don't really see past that until we get uncles and relatives moving in. Our paradigms get bigger. So uncles and relatives are like planets. Our Earth is our family. And then as you get further away, that's your different spheres of reality, different planets. And then you start making decisions. You say, well, I'm a kindergartner. I'm a girl. I'm a boy. I live on the East Coast or the West Coast, or I'm a Republican. I'm a Democrat. But whenever you pick a side, you lose a whole side. So if you end up picking sides, then it doesn't work. If you're just Republican and you can't see an idea because it's from the other side, even if it's a good idea, you won't accept it into your bubble. So whenever you have yourself, even if to be a man or woman is like one of the biggest barriers. If you think of, this is how you get rid of the barriers. You'll get power every time you get rid of a barrier. Try this. If you think of men and women are the same, except that men came second. First we had an egg, and then we had a female, and then some of the females became males when testosterone was added to it. So we're all females, just that men have long cervixes. How's that?
Some longer than others.
I love that.
Then you can just break away with this duality, men versus women. We're all the same thing. We should, you know, learn how to make this a better reality. That's all.
Well, on that point, we got to take a break here, and we'll be right back with a lot more of this fun conversation. You're listening to Expanding Mind with Eric Davis and Maja Daou. We're talking with Kelvin DeWolf, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to Expanding Mind on the Progressive Radio Network. This is Maja Daou, and we're here with Mr. Eric Davis talking to Dr. Kelvin DeWolf about healing and energy and martial arts and all that fun stuff. And I was wondering, Kelvin, so philosophically, when you take all those concepts, I was wondering if you have any just crazy stories of healing that you've seen where someone came in to see you and they were just like super jacked up and way, way into their black and white business and you were able to help them kind of come back to a center point. Have you done any healings that just really had a significant impact on people?
I think one of the biggest places I worked at for this reaction was the Beverly Center on Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah, the free one over there?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
It's a free clinic, so people can come in and they get acupuncture. And usually you get people who are like homeless people, or you get slaves that came from Saudi Arabia and escaped, or you'll get things like really hard-working immigrant families will come in and get acupuncture. And then you get to the point where it really just changes their whole life. We had one lady, she came in, she was homeless, and she got acupuncture, and I explained to her how the reality works around us, and she just stopped being homeless. She went and got a job on a cruise ship and sailed the world.
Hmm.
Her biggest thing she had to do was give up her friends. Or get her friends a job. That was the biggest barrier. We had people that come in because they couldn't go to work because their back was too painful. We'd give them acupuncture, and the next appointment, they would just come in, and they wouldn't get acupuncture. They just came in to say thank you.
Huh.
It was crazy. Every
so
week
really quick,
like
in
that.
Other words.
Yeah,
it's like fast.
Like zap. You don't see them anymore. But they come in and tell you. Like the worst part is when they get better and they don't tell you. You just think they left or something. But here's an energetic way to do it yourself. There's a theory where you say you make yourself stronger for the sole purpose of making other people stronger. So you do things that are difficult to make yourself stronger on purpose. And so instead of going away and joining an ashram or something to get enlightened, you would try to get this way while you're doing other stuff to make yourself stronger. So it's like if you are a person who can go over a hill and there's a tidal wave coming in, good for you. You made it over the hill, but everybody else got wiped out by the tidal wave. you want to be the person who can go over the hill and then take people with you. You have to be stronger than lifting yourself. So you can't be a 110-pound yogi. You got to be more of a warrior, martial artist kind of thing. It's only because the rules have changed in the last 100 years. A thousand years ago, you couldn't save the whole world, but now you can. If you get enough people out there who want world peace, you can actually have world peace because we don't have to communicate with our superiors anymore. We can directly communicate with each other.
So do you think that warrior spirit is more important now, or is something that you'd like to see cultivated more?
I'd like to see it explained better because people think warrior spirit means fighting. It doesn't mean fighting. It means protecting. If you are a dad and your kid falls off a boat, are you strong enough to jump in the water and go rescue them? That would be your warrior spirit, right? You're trained to swim. That's your training. Or if a dog attacks somebody, are you strong enough to pull the dog off somebody? If somebody gets in a fight, are you able to stop somebody from hurting somebody else? Like in Texas a couple years ago, this is in Dallas, some guy was killing his 2-year-old son-in-law, or I guess a stepson, and there was about 20 people who tried to stop him, but he would hit them, and they'd never been hit before, and they would stop fighting once they get really hurt. So he ended up killing the kid, and nobody could have stopped him. Mm. The cop actually had to jump off a helicopter and shoot the guy. But if you're a martial artist, you're somebody who knows how to fight. You don't have to fight because you know how to fight. That's the silly thing about martial arts.
Well,
people, I don't
want
to learn how to fight.
Martial arts teaches you to not have to fight.
Right. Nobody's going to step into the room and pick on the martial artist right away, all right? How it works. You become really strong because you're doing things like finger push-ups and pull-ups and doing the split and lifting your leg up in the air and kicking and things. What you try to make yourself stronger for the purpose of helping other people, and that makes you back in balance.
Well, what
if
do you think? What do you think?
So
that's a good. I mean, that's like obviously the raddest version of it, and kind of like the hero version. But what do you think about what is that when those warrior spirits go bad? Like the ones that learn all that and then kind of utilize it to exploit other people or force people to do things? Because there's like. That's the best incarnation of it, right?
Well, what happens is that if there's too many good people, it lets a bad person take over.
Mm.
The bad person's only taken over because there's too many good people. If you've never been in a fight, you would never, ever get in a fight. Fighting is against your religion or whatever it is, then you are pretty useless when it comes to stopping somebody from taking over everybody else. But usually it's only one or two people taking over everybody else, and everybody else fought back, you wouldn't have that problem. It's kind of like that video you see on YouTube with all the water buffalo coming back and rescuing the baby water buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Everybody's seen that video.
I feel like it's kind of the same thing that happens in your body, right?
Right. It happens everywhere, I think. You just make yourself stronger, and then inside your body gets stronger. You have all these bacteria that live in your body, and they're little predators, and if you're becoming more like a prey item, they will eat you. But if you're more of a predator and you think of your immune system as a predator and you eat bacteria as your food, then you could have food as your bacteria. You won't be afraid of touching dirty things and you won't be afraid of, you know, that was on the floor for more than 5 seconds. You can't eat that. Like, why not? It's like,
yeah.
Bacteria.
So it's a great you bring up the example of food because that's really a place where you see. You know, people have so much issues, so much philosophy in their food. You know, their attitude about life is in food, and especially you see this like people who are, you know, seeking health, seeking balance, seeking wholeness, seeking wellness. but they sometimes fall into this kind of neurotic place where, like, anything that has any kind of toxin or what they perceive as a toxin in it is like, oh, that's forbidden because there's a kind of purity that they're going for. But there's often with these people a great deal of a kind of weakness, you know, or a kind of almost a spiritual weakness, I find, when people are really pursuing that kind of purity. And whereas I've known other characters who were very strong, who weren't even particularly, quote-unquote, conscious about their food, but the way they engaged food, even if some of it was crap food, was with such sort of intensity and joy and out of this kind of sense of strength that they, you know, they seem to be doing just fine by the whole matter. And I remember that one of them, I asked him, because I was like, hey, man, how do you, you know, how can you, like, how do you eat that stuff? You know, even he was this big super character, you know, one of these, like, monster characters who just kind of rolls through the world and just, like, makes things happen. And he's just like, look, you know, you can get all worried about the food that you're doing, and then you eat with worry. Or resentment or whatever, or you like go, look, I'm enjoying my food, and the joy itself will allow your body to assimilate what it needs and gets rid of what it doesn't need, because it's always doing this, taking what it needs, getting rid of what it doesn't need. I mean, you could take that too far, obviously, but that's a lot more what you're talking about, it sounds like.
Yeah, he's actually at a space where he could probably do that. Most people can't do that until they get to that space, because your subconscious will get to you.
Yeah.
Your little voices in the back of your head will get to you. So you can do it another way, too. You can think of it as if you have a sewer rat living on toxins and stuff, he's got more toxins than we do. And we take him to put him in a cage where a nice white rat is living, or and you take the white rat and you put him to where the sewer rat's living, which guy is going to live longer? The white rat's not going to last very long. But the sewer rat is all, oh, this is awesome. Right? But you have to be the sewer rat first.
Mm.
I have a health place in Highland Park in Los Angeles, and I get people coming in, and it's like, what kind of cleaning fluid do you use on your floor and your window? I'm like, oh, just stuff that keeps it clean, I suppose. And they go, oh, because it's too toxic. And I'm thinking, you know what, you live in Los Angeles. You know that you live in Los Angeles? Like, look around, you live in freaking Los Angeles, you live in a toxic place, and you're trying to keep your little teeny space non-toxic, it's not even making a dent to it. You're looking at the wrong thing. You got to make yourself stronger so the toxins don't bother you.
That's a big thing with how people deal with so many things, from our bodies to disease to family to countries to humanity, is that they're looking at the wrong thing. They're looking at, you know, how am I going to change something outside myself instead of changing something inside myself, right? It's like all these people, all they have to do is get shoes for themselves instead of trying to, like, make roads, right? But everybody just wants to make roads, and no one wants to put on any shoes.
And walk 100 miles in another man's moccasins, I suppose, huh?
So how do you, when you work with people, like, who come, let's say they come for martial arts, and they're just, you know, they're whatever, they're attracted to martial arts, maybe for some dumb reasons or whatever, do you find that like, just the practice itself will inculcate these kind of values and attitudes that you're talking about, which are, you know, sort of against the grain? Or do you feel like there's also something in either teaching people about martial arts or even about medicine and how to keep themselves better that, you know, you got to really, like, there's certain ideas or certain ways of breaking through the kind of junk that's in our minds a lot of the time in order to open up this perspective?
Yeah, I think martial arts is really good for most people because it gets them into control of their own physical body. Most people can't even move their own body with control of their own, like, I say, move your little toe up by itself, and nobody can move their little toe, even though they used to be able to do it. They just forgot how to do it. So in martial arts, we try to make your weaknesses stronger. We don't try to make your strength stronger. We try to make your weaknesses stronger. And when you make your weaknesses stronger, all your other strengths will get exponentially stronger.
Mm.
So I can teach you how to do martial arts that will take you 20 years in about 6 months. Because I understand the eggs of it, or the seed of the martial arts process. And I can break down all different martial arts into 5 phases and 8 angles and 3 circles of awareness. And that's it. You learn those, and you just decide which one you want to learn, and we just plug it in, and you can learn it really fast.
Do you have any crazy fight stories where you had to get in, like, a big fight?
I worked as a bouncer for almost 2 years in Miami Beach, and I was in a fight probably 4 or 5 times a night, and they're all crazy fights. You never know what's going to happen. You get in a fight when out of the blue. Like you help somebody up and because they fell down and they punch you. Like it's really crazy. You never know what's going to happen. They're all drunk and intoxicated or on some kind of drug, and they're harder to fight because they're all sweaty and slippery. So you kind of find out what works. Like if you stand on your foot for a long time, you kind of find out what works best, which muscles work to keep you up. You find out which part of the martial arts works best in an actual situation. At least in an actual situation, in this reality, I'm not saying it's going to work the same in ancient Japan with a rocky coast or in some kind of southern swampy South China area, but for this reality, my system seems to work pretty good.
So what was different about your system that kind of allows it to fit our reality maybe better than forms that were developed in, you know, whatever seaside, you know, dense seaside places or the mountains or some other kind of environment?
Our interaction difference, like if you're in southern China, everybody's really close, so you have to fight really close, so that all the ones that are based on standing up and reaching out don't work because you lose, so all those ones kind of disappear.
Right.
The ones in northern China where it's more open, all the close-in close punches aren't going to work because you're not going to reach anybody. Right. Mine is both of those. Mine breaks it down into really far away and really close. And the closer you get to it, the more grappling it is. And the further you get away, the more striking and grabbing it is. So I break mine down into kicking and punching, and then wrestling, and then grappling. And you find out that wrestling beats kicking and punching, grappling beats wrestling, and kicking and punching beats grappling. Or shina. So it's like rock, paper, and scissors. So that when you figure that out, you can tell which one you're going to do in a situation.
Mm. When it goes back and forth, too, like the biggest thing with any fight, it usually starts like someone will push somebody, right? And then eventually people fall down, right? Because you can only kind of fight back and forth with each other for so long before someone's going to fall on the ground. And then you got to go to wrestling, and then you got to go to grappling, and then punching and kicking doesn't work, and then you got to do one of the other ones. And a lot of people, right, they'll just know how to punch, and then as soon as they fall down on the ground, they don't know what to do. So it's right, important to have all the aspects.
Mine, the standing up one and the lying down one, you do the exact same techniques. You just do it closer. Exactly
right,
the same. For there's one thing called in wrestling called a bridge. I think if you've done wrestling, you know it's a bridge. To us, that's also the beginning of a roundhouse kick. We've already practiced it. So they're all the same depending on how you look at it. It's like the leaf and the wind and what makes the wind blow. It's all the same stuff.
So what can you talk a little bit about your place in Highland Park if folks wanted to go by? So you teach martial arts there?
Yeah, I teach it there. Where we have, it's a place which we try to give what the community wants to learn. So we have yoga there, Pilates, martial arts. Sometimes we do Tai Chi, or we have weekend classes there. Once in a while I have a seminar. I do a seminar that kind of explains how all the symbols of different cultures are all really the same symbol. And once you see that, you'll start looking at the world a lot different, and things will make a lot more sense to you. And you really don't have any different minds anymore. You get one mind, which is a comforting thing. You don't have to talk to yourself all the time. Hey, how are you doing? How are you doing? What did you do today? Oh, I was there with you. We talked to me before. Shut up. You shut up.
So when is that? Are you going to have one of those seminars coming up?
I have to check on their website, but I think there's one coming up in the end of August or September. But if you want to check the old seminar, it's on the very bottom of the events page. If you go to themindandbodymedicine.com and you go to the events section, and it talks about the last seminar I did. It's kind of fun. You can start going down the rabbit hole a lot easier if you know the rules of the rabbit hole.
That's certainly true.
We got a couple of minutes here, so give us a rule for the rabbit hole for the listeners. What's a good rule?
Make yourself stronger for the sole purpose of helping somebody else.
Yeah.
That's the main rule. Somebody who was a chief for the American Indians wasn't the guy that beat everybody up. Right, he was the guy that was the guy that knew how to make arrows. He was the guy that knew how to make a boat. He knew how the shamans and all the other stuff. The guy that people went to for advice, and he was happy to give out advice because he got his stuff done already. That's how it works. It's a little different philosophy. So since to show you how it works, I just promote it myself, my business, So I wonder if I could have to promote somebody else now. So I'm getting my car fixed. Can I promote the guy who's fixing my car? This way you make yourself stronger to make somebody else stronger.
Mm.
Can you do that? I'm going to talk about my car plate.
Do you think when you talk about making yourself stronger, how much of that, I mean, I know that ultimately the mind and body and soul and the, you know, physical apparatus.
Once you realize that, like, there's no difference. There's no difference between mind and body. You were made and your body formed around you, so your body and your mind are just a reflection of each other. You can't separate mind, body, and spirit. The spirit comes when you connect with your body and mind again. So they're all the one little triangle hooked together.
But I'm just thinking about when you say get stronger, now I can be like, okay, so I should, you know, if I was going to go down this rabbit hole with this good rule, you know, maybe I would do more, you know, I must be physically stronger. But then there's all these, like, ways that maybe I emotionally cheat or I hide from myself.
Right, right. Emotions are pathologies. Emotions can be tools, but mostly they're pathologies, and they will get you in a certain lean in one direction. Like a tree will lean a certain direction, that's the way it's going to die when it grows up. If you get too stuck in the emotions, you'll get one direction and you'll get pulled out faster.
Mm-hmm.
So make yourself stronger. You make yourself energetically stronger too by doing energetic exercises. Qigong is an energetic exercise workout. Acupuncture is an energetic workout. Neigong is a real deep down the rabbit hole energetic workout where you start creating an energy body around your body, like a Manitou around your body and inside your body, and you try to join them together. So it's really, if you take a couple of classes and you start seeing how it works, it's really simple. It's kind of like unlearning not to do something. It's like you're programmed to do this already, it's that we don't do it for some reason.
Yeah, I found that for me it was like Qigong took off for me. The more I stopped thinking about it as Qigong, and I started thinking about it as just what my body wants to do in the morning, standing
right,
up in the light.
That's what it wants to do. It wants to get stronger. So the goal is to become what we used to be, not to evolve into a new being, but to become what we used to be. If you read about my tribe, a long time ago, people would just evolve into stars and leave. Like, even the Mayans would talk about all these guys would take a bunch of magic mushrooms, what they call the flesh of the gods, and then put themselves into caves, and then from the cave, they would turn into a star and leave. Like, that's crazy. But why not? But why not try it? What's the other point? Going to just retire and go into the dirt for a while? No. Even if it's not true, it's just fun to try it and see what happens. I'm not saying this is like a way to do something. I think this is, I don't know, it's a kind of way that joins all the other ways together. So let me talk about my car place for a minute. It's 4802 Eagle Rock Boulevard, Car Tech Center. If you have a car you want fixed up, take it there. His owner's Roz. You can't beat a guy named Roz.
Definitely cannot beat a guy named Roz.
And
Eagle
so,
Rock Boulevard.
Kelvin,
never trust a mechanic with sunglasses on. That's the advice he gave me.
Kelvin, so to help you, if people want to come and get appointments with you or take some of the classes, can they find all the information on the website?
It's on the website. There's a Facebook version of it. There's what's called First Defense, 1-S-T-D-E-F-E-N-S-E. If you can go and like that page, I can see how many people have liked it today. Also, themindandbodymedicine.com. Just come in. We'll figure out what you need to do first. Usually it's depending on how long of this trail you've come. Lots of people whom I meet are along the trail already. They just need how to move energy around or something. It's really quick to figure out.
Well, Kelvin, thanks so much for being on Expanding Mind. It was a very interesting, sprightly talk. Lots of images in my mind now, becoming stars, school of fish, black and white, foxes at the top of the chain. I love it. So good luck with your stuff, and thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, check out the events page. You really like that because it talks about how everything is related, why there's parts of the pyramid missing on a dollar bill and why the capstone's missing. It compares the old pyramids from the South America with the new pyramid and how that works with your body. It's all the same stuff.
All righty.
We're all in this giant illusion hanging out together.
All right, man. Well, we got to leave it there. So,
all right.
From Maja, meet all you out there. Keep your minds open.